The oil company BP can get back to doing business with the U.S. government.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California and is supported by Constant Contact, offering small businesses online tools like social media, event, and email marketing from one login at constantcontact.com.
From APM, I'm David Brancaccio. The company at the center of America's worst offshore oil spill can now do business with the U.S. government again. BP was suspended from government contracts during the investigation that followed the 2010 Deepwater Horizon explosion in the Gulf of Mexico, the one that killed 11 people and spilled nearly 5 million gallons of crude into the environment. Next Wednesday in New Orleans, there's a big federal oil and gas lease sale, and BP will be free to compete. The BBC's Theo Leggett is following this from London. Theo, good morning.
Good morning.
What do we know about the terms that BP had to agree to in order to return to the waters off America's Gulf Coast?
Well, on the face of it, they look quite onerous. BP's agreed to abide by a whole long list of requirements on safety, corporate governance, and ethics. But when you dig into it, there's not a huge amount that's new here. BP had already agreed to revamp its risk management strategies under a deal reached with the US government 2 years ago. So it's already committed itself to improving training methods, for example, improving equipment standards, and so on. So as I say, on the face of it, it looks like quite an onerous list of requirements. But in the real world, it probably won't make a huge amount of difference compared to what BP would have had to do anyway.
Now, for BP, this is extremely important to their bottom line. This will, it's my understanding, allow them to turn the spigot back on for profits.
Absolutely. I mean, it's clear that BP is very pleased by this deal. The Gulf of Mexico is a very lucrative area for exploration and production. And Bob Dudley, BP's CEO, has already said that the Gulf is one of its key areas for future development. But that said, BP has been quite restrained in its rhetoric. It doesn't want to seem too triumphant, and given the nature of the criticism it's received in the US over the past 4 years, that's unsurprising.
The BBC's Theo Leggett in London, thank you.
Thank you.
Now let's check the numbers. The FT 100 in London is down 0.25%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong fell 1% after the weak economic data from China we've been reporting on this week. The Dow fell 231 points, 1.4% yesterday. Dow futures have just turned down. S&P and NASDAQ futures are up still. Over the next several weeks, millions of school children in the U.S. will be testing out some new tests. Most states have adopted new education standards known as the Common Core. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
Most Common Core states will use tests developed by one of two groups. Jeff Nellhaus is director of policy, research, and design for one of them, the Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers, known as PARC. Nellhaus says PARC will field test nearly 10,000 questions to look for glitches or bias. Students won't be scored.
A field test is a test of the test. It's not a test of the students, the teachers, the schools or districts.
That hasn't stopped a great deal of test anxiety on the part of teachers and students.
We've been trying to tell them that this is not going to count, but, you know, I'm not even confident.
Liz Natale teaches English at Sedgwick Middle School in West Hartford, Connecticut. Her students will take the Smarter Balanced field test, that's the other one, next Thursday.
A lot of them are going to feel like failures, even though they're not.
Some parents around the country are planning to opt out of the tests altogether, not wanting their kids to be guinea pigs. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Invest Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland, a European location with a young, well-educated, agile workforce at the ready. More at investni.com. By Citrix with GoToMeeting, connecting people and businesses worldwide in face-to-face online meetings. More at GoToMeeting.com. And by Allianz, providing investment, insurance, and retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S. since 1896. AllianzUSA.com.
As the business media focused on takeover deals such as Men's Warehouse buying Joseph A. Bank for $1.8 billion, a takeover of a great cultural asset has been overlooked. In Washington, D.C., the Corcoran Gallery of Art, nonprofit and financially troubled, is being absorbed by both the National Gallery and George Washington University. The government-funded National Gallery will manage the Corcoran's vast collection, maybe selling parts of it. The Corcoran's Beaux Arts Building and the Art School will go under GWU's control. Critic Blake Gopnik watches the intersection of art and business for us and sees a failure of philanthropy here. Blake, good to see you.
Nice to be back.
So the works from the Corcoran will go over to the National Gallery in Washington. The beautiful Beaux-Arts building and the Art College go to George Washington University. End of an era, Blake, but why does it bother you?
People are talking about this as though it's a cure for the Corcoran, but it's a little bit like saying you've got someone that's been sick for 20 years and you're going to cut off their legs and arms and remove the brain from the body and declare that a cure. The Corcoran's an institution. It's got history. It's got an importance to the community. It seems to me that those things should continue.
But they don't have the money.
Well, that's the problem. If there's a failure here, and there's clearly a failure, like no one thinks this is a good outcome. This is just the best of all possible bad outcomes. If there's a problem here, it's that the philanthropy failed, that the basic model that we have in this country that says rich people will support the things the public needs just fell apart.
You do have the public sector, though, sort of stepping up here. That's what the National Gallery is.
Stepping up in a very minor way. It occurred to me on the way over here that it would have been much preferable, I think, if the National Gallery had dug deep in its coffers and actually bought the pictures from the Corcoran. Then the Corcoran would have had some money to survive. It could have become a gallery of contemporary art, which Washington really needs. So there are things the Corcoran could have done to stay alive. But what it couldn't do is attract rich people who cared. They prefer to be on the board of the National Gallery or the Smithsonian Museums, right? That's higher prestige. And because of their prestige-seeking, this whole institution dies. That's what it boils down to.
Do you also worry that perhaps just the value of an artistic institution like this wasn't fully appreciated by people who had the resources?
Yeah. I mean, if there had been a real interest in the public good, someone would have stepped forward and said, I will take this over. I will make this happen. Despite, I mean, you have to acknowledge 40 years, something like 40 years of gross dysfunction. I mean, the Corcoran's a big, beautiful building, should be a major institution, and it's been entirely off the radar since 1989 at least.
Blake Gopnik, critic at large for artinfo.com. Blake, thank you.
Thank you.
At marketplace.org, there's a sample of that new Common Core test that our education correspondent was talking about a few minutes ago. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
How far would you go to make the public schools that your kids go to better?
They're only going to get one education. And at the end of the day, you have to do what's best for your kids.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. You know, somehow I think it's going to get a lot more complicated than that. We'll tell you all about it, and we'll have the numbers from Wall Street as well next time on Marketplace from APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.